Hello, my name is Hester Graves. I'd like to thank the organizers of the conference for having me speak here and for helping me with the document reader. And I'd also like to thank Jeff Ligarius, because while this is joint work with Nick Ramsey, it grew out of an earlier project where he was very helpful. So the structure of this talk, let's see if I can figure this out. Save slide. Yeah. Okay. The structure of this talk is going to be in three parts. I believe there are probably only two people in the audience who know what Euclidean ideals are. So first I'm going to review what Euclidean domains are. Then I'm going to introduce what Euclidean ideals are. I'm not going to review what Euclidean domains are. I'm going to review what's known about Euclidean domains. And in the third part, I'll talk about Euclidean ideals in imaginary quadratic fields. So, just to review, if R is a domain that has a function phi that goes from R, but not 0, to a well-ordered set that satisfies the condition that for any pair of elements A and B with B not equal to 0, there exists some Q and R such that A can be written as BQ plus R, where either phi of R is less than phi of B or R is equal to 0, we say phi is a Euclidean algorithm and R is a Euclidean domain. And every Euclidean domain is a PID. And for the rest of the talk, we'll assume all Euclidean algorithms map to the natural numbers. And when people think of Euclidean domains and algorithms, they usually think of the ring of integers of a number field and the norm. So they think of the integers and absolute value. And this is so important that we're going to specifically define if K is a number field and the norm is the Euclidean algorithm for the ring of integers, we say the ring of integers is norm Euclidean. What's interesting, though, is that there are rings of integers that are Euclidean but not norm Euclidean. So I believe the first example to be proved to satisfy this condition was Z append 1 plus the square root of 69 over 2. And then Harper was able to prove that Z append the square root of 14 is Euclidean but not norm Euclidean. And that had been conjectured a while ago. So what tools did Harper use? He used a variation on Motzkin's lemma. And Motzkin's lemma starts with a construction. If you have a ring R, we define A0 to be 0 and the units of R. And then we define the A sub I's to be the unit, to be the union of the earlier set, A sub I minus 1, and the set of elements B and R such that A sub I minus 1 surjects onto R modulo beta. We then can take the union of all these nested A sub I, and we call it union A. And A is equal to the entire domain if and only if the domain has an n-valued Euclidean algorithm. And something that is interesting is that this actually constructs the fastest algorithm from R to the natural numbers. An example would be, again, the integers. You can have A0 by definition is 0, n plus or minus 1. Well, for what elements beta can every element in the quotient be represented by 0 or plus or minus 1? Well, you add on plus or minus 2, plus or minus 3. And you can see that the sets are equal to the number of elements whose digits in the binary expansion is n plus 1. And that is definitely not the norm. So you can see that the fastest Euclidean algorithm is actually almost never the norm. Probably is never the norm. So why is this so useful? Or why are we interested? Well, Weinberger proved that if K is a number field with infinitely many units in the ring of integers, and one assumes the Riemann hypothesis, then you have class number 1 if and only if the ring of integers is a Euclidean domain. But note that you have to have infinitely many units in the ring of integers. So this does not apply to imaginary quadratic fields. So what's the situation in an imaginary quadratic field? There are only 5 fields that have whose ring of integers is a Euclidean domain, and in each of these cases, the ring of integers is non-Euclidean. So now on to Euclidean ideals. These were invented by Lenstra, who is in the audience today. So what's the motivation for the definition? Let's look back at what it means to be non-Euclidean. If you have 2 elements, A and B, you can write them as A equals BQ plus R, where the norm of R is strictly less than the norm of B. Well, what happens if we divide both sides by B? Well, we can see that the norm of A over B minus Q is the norm of R over B, which is strictly less than 1. Well, what is 1? I mean, 1 has many, many meanings, and one of them is the norm of the ring of integers. And what if you replace the ring of integers by a generic ideal C? So this motivates the following definition. Let R be a Dedekind domain, and E is the set of fractional ideals which contain R, so the inverses of integral ideals. So suppose C is an ideal in R, and that psi maps from R to W, a well-ordered set. We say that psi is a Euclidean E to W, sorry. Let me fix that, except this pen up here doesn't work. So please just tell yourself it goes from E to W. We say psi is a Euclidean algorithm for C, if for all I and E, and for all X and I, C, set minus C, there exists some Y and C that satisfies that equation. And if such a psi exists, we say that C is a Euclidean ideal. Oh, that did not save. So some interesting facts. If C is a Euclidean ideal, then so is every other ideal in its class. And the domain R is Euclidean if and only if the principal class is Euclidean as an ideal. And if C is Euclidean, then its class generates the class group of R. And if you want to motivate the definition, if psi of I is the norm of I inverse, and you plug it into our definition earlier, then this reduces to the norm of X plus Y is less than the norm of C. So here's a beautifully drawn example. If you have the Q append the square root of 5 and you have the following ideal, then these guys here are points on the lattice. Around each point on the lattice, we've created a disk of radius root 2. It covers the entire plane, so you can see that every point in the any point in IC is within root 2 of the lattice. So it satisfies our condition, and it is norm Euclidean, or the ideal is norm Euclidean. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. No, you're right. It's not real quadratic. I forgot the negative sign. Sorry?
It should be -5.
Yes, it should be -5. So, Lenstra proved in this paper that if you have a number field with infinitely many units, and C is a non-zero ideal in said number field, if one assumes the generalized Riemann hypothesis, then the class of C generates the class group if and only if C is a Euclidean ideal. And again, note that this does not apply to imaginary quadratic fields. Now, he proved which ones have a norm Euclidean ideal, but remember we saw examples of real quadratic fields that had a Euclidean ring of integers that was not norm Euclidean. So we're going to see if there are any Euclidean ideals in the imaginary quadratic case that are not norm Euclidean. So in my dissertation, I had a generalization of Motzkin's lemma. Does the same thing. A0C is the ring of integers, and then after that we have this nested sequence of sets of ideals in E, and if your union of them is equal to the set of ideals E, then you have a Euclidean algorithm mapping to M. And note that if I is in A1 comma C, but not in A0 comma C, then I inverse is in the class of C. So now we're going to start talking about what is going on with Euclidean ideals in imaginary quadratic fields. So we happen to know that Q of I and Q append the square root of negative 3 have Euclidean ideals since their ring of integers are norm Euclidean. And all other imaginary quadratic fields have only two units in the ring of integers, plus and minus 1. So what does this imply? Well, we know that A0 comma C is the ring of integers, so we might ask ourselves what is in A1 comma C. Well, if I is in A1 comma C, not only that, but we know that IC mod C is isomorphic to R mod I inverse. Well, we can see that since we're translating elements in X by elements in Y, that we can view these as equivalence classes. And there are only two generators of OK, and we have a zero equivalence class, elements in C. So we can only have three possible representatives. So if an element I is in A1 comma C, it has to have norm 2 or 3. So using this method in SAGE, you know, guessing, oh, if 2 ramifies, what happens next? We were able to figure out whether or not K has a Euclidean ideal if K is not equal to Q append the square root of negative 23, which was so frustrating because it meant back to the drawing board. So we had to come up with a new method of tackling these. So for the and it's funny because how did we do this? It was the advice I always give my students: when confused, draw a picture. And of course, there's no picture here, but there will be in a couple slides, so just please be patient. So for the following, K is an imaginary quadratic field, and we're going to fix an embedding of K into the complex numbers. And if C is a non-zero fractional ideal in the ring of integers, the image of C forms a lattice. And around each point in C, you can look at the open disk of radius, the square root of norm of C, and we'll call the union of these disks U. And if U covers all of C, then C is norm Euclidean. So we were able to show that if you have epsilon greater than 0, there exists some M such that for all Z and K and all fractional ideals I, such that the norm of I is bigger than M, then there exists some X and I inverse such that the norm of X minus Z is less than epsilon. And the proof is actually really simple. Just take a representative of every class in the class group, and you can view that representative as a lattice in C. You can cover all of C if you make big enough disks centered at the points in the lattice. Choose MI to be such a big enough number, or the square of such a big enough number. And you can see then that if there's some random element of the field, then there's an element in the lattice that's within that radius of the field element. So then we just take the max of the radii we've chosen multiplied by the norm of the ideal, which we used to get the lattice, divided by epsilon. And then you can do the same thing. Oh, I forgot to cover things up so it would be all nice and tricky. Please pretend you didn't see that there's something to the side. So, take a field element and let J be an ideal whose norm is big enough, And note that you can write J is equal to G times one of these representatives for some G in the field. And that means that there exists some element in I inverse that's the norm of that element minus G times Z prime is less than MI. But multiply that by G inverse, and you can see we could rewrite the norm of G inverse as the following. And then note that we can write 1 over the norm of J as the following, and everything works out to be less than epsilon. So I'm going to put the lemma back up because there's no point in really remembering all the details of the proof. So then we found the following proposition. So let's say you have that ideal and you view it as a lattice. And let's say the complement of U contains a non-empty set. So here are points in a fundamental domain of the lattice, and see how there's an empty set in the complement of U. And since K is dense, there exists some Z in K that you can have a square root of epsilon ball of Z contained in the complement. And then we can define M as in our lemma, but for epsilon instead of the square root of epsilon. So choose some element, some ideal in E, such that the norm of the inverse of that element times C inverse is bigger than M. And by our lemma, there exists an X in I sub 0 C that satisfies that. So note that here's Z, here's our square root of epsilon ball, and X is stuck in the square root of epsilon ball. So suppose, leading to contradiction, that C has a Euclidean algorithm. Well, we've got X as an I0C set minus C, and we've got I0 as an E, which is the same thing as A. So there exists some Y in C satisfying that condition. But if you check out the norm of I1, you can see that it's strictly less than the norm, well, that it's less than or equal to the norm of I0. But that psi of that is strictly less than psi of I sub 0. So we can repeat this to get a sequence, I0, I1, I2. Notice while the norms are decreasing, the image under the Euclidean algorithm is strictly decreasing, but n is well ordered, so you have a contradiction. So it can't be a Euclidean ideal. So we can put everything we've done together. If K is imaginary and quadratic, and K is not Q append I or Q append the square root of negative 3, then we saw that I1 comma C has to contain the inverse of a prime of norm 2 or 3, and that prime is in the same class as C. So that means if K has a Euclidean ideal, then that prime P is a Euclidean ideal. So you can break things down into cases. If the norm of P is equal to 2, it either ramifies or it splits. And we're looking at Q append the square root of negative D, where D satisfies certain congruence classes. And we just plug things into Sage, and you can see what the prime ideals look like, right? And as D increases, the height of these fundamental domains increases. So we can see that if D is equal to 1, things are covered. If D is equal to 5, things are covered. If D is equal to 13, we're no longer covered, and we know that this will not work for any D bigger than 13. It gets too tall. So how about the next case? 2 ramifies, D is congruent to 2 mod 4. Covered, not covered, it fails. So we can't be bigger than 6. Next case, D is equal to 7. Covered, fails. But do you see how teensy that green area is where it fails? That's why Sage wouldn't tell us it didn't have a Euclidean ideal, because the area which did not work is so teeny. So that's it for when P is equal to P as norm 2. Then we just need to consider the situation where P has norm 3. And again, first situation, it immediately fails. Second situation, it works for the first two. Then it fails. Works, works, fails, and then works, and then fails. So the conclusion is that the list of quadratic imaginary fields with the Euclidean ideal is exactly the same as Leinster's list of quadratic imaginary fields with the norm Euclidean ideal. And that's the end.